On a dark and stormy night, a passenger ship leaves Chicago for Milwaukee. 400 people were aboard. The ship was called the Lady Elgin.
The Lady Elgin is one of these palatial, beautiful, ornate passenger steamers.
The date is September 7th, 1860.
It was torrential rain, gale force winds, and early that next morning, off the coast of around Highland Park, Illinois, one of those little, small lumber schooners, a two-masted sail ship, the Augusta, slams right into the side of the Lady Elgin. The Lady Elgin was lit, but not well enough for the unlit Augusta to see it. Neither ship was able to get out of the way in time. And the crack that collision makes, the boilers fall into it, and the ship cracks in half. About 100 people would float to safety on the beaches on anything they could find. But 300 people would lose their lives. It's the deadliest shipwreck in Great Lakes history.
I'm Erin Allen, and this is Curious City. Lake Michigan is home to many, many shipwrecks. And the wreckage of the Lady Elgin is still out there, a few miles off the north shore of Chicago. You might be familiar with the Eastland. That disaster killed over 800 people on a dock in the Chicago River in 1915. But the lesser known story of the Lady Elgin is perhaps more consequential and more than just a maritime tragedy. Its story is about the shipping business in Chicago in the 1860s. It's about who owns historic shipwrecks and about Illinois' lackluster place in underwater archaeology today. Our last episode was about our local lighthouses, which were built to help prevent shipwrecks. Today, we're asking about the shipwreck that led to the Grosse Pointe Lighthouse in Evanston, the Lady Elgin.
It is something that almost none of my visitors to the museum come in having heard of before.
This is Madeline Crispell, the curator of the Chicago Maritime Museum, which is located in the Bridgeport Art Center.
People always tell me it should have a song like The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, but it does, Lost on the Lady Elgin. A saltless sea shanty written back in the 1860s.
We love a shanty.
We do.
Lost on the Lady Elgin, sleeping awake no more, numbered with those 300 who failed to reach the shore.
There's a three-year-old who comes in and sings it all the time.
Aw. Chicago was on its way to becoming the busiest seaport in the country when the Lady Elgin sank. Madeline says there are only 26 documented shipwrecks in Illinois waters, but the number of actual shipwrecks is likely dozens, maybe even hundreds higher than that.
Why would there have been so many?
Yeah, so some of that is the traffic. So, you know, the busiest highway is going to have the most car accidents most often, but it's also the Great Lakes. And sailing is really difficult on the Great Lakes, something I didn't know as a non-sailor and something that a lot of people from the coasts don't know when they try out sailing on Lake Michigan. But our flat state means there's really unpredictable weather on the Great Lakes. A storm over Rockford can become a squall over Lake Michigan really quickly.
Lake Michigan also has rocky and shallow waters, and at the time, inaccurate 19th century maps and only a handful of lighthouses. So, on a treacherous night in 1860, why oh why did the Lady Elgin cast off to Milwaukee? And who was on board? It all started with a fundraiser, just a few months before the Civil War.
It is chartered by a militia out of Milwaukee. They are an Irish Democratic militia, the Union Guard, and they find themselves at odds with the Republican abolitionist governor of the state, and they find themselves in need to fundraise to purchase new guns for themselves.
The passengers on the Lady Elgin were a group of Milwaukee Democrats. They were supporters of presidential candidate Stephen Douglas, a rival of Abraham Lincoln. They were traveling to see their candidate speak in Chicago and to raise money for weapons.
The whole point, you know, you would get your ticket. That ticket would be the fundraiser. It would take you down to Chicago. You would have a day in the city. You'd hear the Milwaukee brass band play. You'd hear Stephen Douglas give a speech, and then you'd get back on your ship that night and be in Milwaukee again in the morning. But things do not quite go to plan. Stephen Douglas probably can't make it fit in his schedule. It doesn't seem like he ever made it to Chicago to give that speech.
Huh.
But the real issue is the weather.
Captain Jack Wilson saw a storm brewing before the Lady Elgin even left the dock.
Which is serious on Lake Michigan. You know, bad weather can become deadly weather really quickly. But, I mean, people then and now, nobody likes travel being delayed. And so they head out that night at 11:30 p.m.
But another ship, the Augusta, was also out in the storm. They collide. And as the Lady Elgin starts cracking in half, the passengers on board start to break apart doors and furniture for people to float on.
A lot of people were able to find something to float back to shore on. The drummer boy in the Milwaukee band floated to shore on his drum. But once you started to get closer to the beach, and there's no lighthouse in this time, there's nothing illuminating their passage. I mean, it's a terrible storm, there's no moonlight. And as people get closer to the shore, the breakers suck down whatever it is that they're floating on. And many people made it within sight of the beach before they drowned. There really, at this point, was not any kind of organized life-saving service in the Chicago area. There were rowboats. There were people who came to their aid. There was one student. He saved 17 people from the beach, one of the beaches in Evanston, just swimming back and forth, which left him for the rest of his life with health complications.
How did the public react to this, learning the news of maybe some of their loved ones even who had died?
It was huge news. I mean, it affects Milwaukee particularly because that is where everybody who was on this ship was from. So it hits the Milwaukee Irish community really hard. But there had never been a disaster of this scale on Lake Michigan at this time. And there is a huge response. Abraham Lincoln, when he is elected, passes legislation requiring ships to be lit at night. That's where still today the red and green navigational lights you see come from. And there's a public outpouring of grief over this.
Getting back to the lighthouses, how would a lighthouse have helped in this situation?
Sure. So there would have been someone on hand to set out the cry. There would have been a person watching this ship go down, watching all of the people trying to float to shore, who could have mobilized rowboats and some kind of a life-saving operation. And who knows what would have happened if there would have been enough illumination to prevent these ships from running into each other.
Madeline says the wreck of the Lady Elgin influenced the creation of the U.S. Life-Saving Service in 1871, which would later become the Coast Guard, and the opening of Evanston's Grosse Pointe Lighthouse in 1873.
By the 1880s, if your ship were to sink off the coast of Highland Park, there would be a whole different system in place to help rescue you, and perhaps that's why the deadliest shipwreck in Great Lakes history happened all the way back in 1860, mm-hmm. because changes were made as a result of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Today, the Lady Elgin is still at the bottom of Lake Michigan. It took more than 125 years for anybody to recover the wreckage.
In the 19th century, when this ship sinks, there are not a lot of ways to get under the water. And these are the very, very early days of submersibles, of dive suits.
The floor of Lake Michigan isn't something we even have the possibility of visiting until later in the 20th century. The Lady Elgin was found just after a new law was signed by President Ronald Reagan, the Abandoned Shipwrecks Act.
Basically, what the Abandoned Shipwrecks Act does is that it changes how we view shipwrecks. They had been treated in a finder's keeper's way up until then. You find the shipwreck, you get the booty on board, basically.
But now, shipwrecks will be treated more like archaeological sites. Even still, when a salvager named Harry Zike found the Lady Elgin in 1989, after looking for it for over a decade, he wanted to own it. Madeline says he wanted to collect artifacts for himself, display them in a traveling exhibit, and create a permanent home for the collection.
So Harry Zike went back to Cigna, the insurance agency who insured the voyage back in 1860. And because they paid out the claims, technically this wasn't an abandoned shipwreck. It was a shipwreck waiting to be found and claimed, per Harry and his lawyer's arguments.
This kicks off a lengthy legal battle. A federal court ruled in favor of Zike, but that decision was later reversed in favor of the state of Illinois. Then the legal battle resumed. Ultimately, Zike won salvage rights. He passed away in 2016. Zike's organization, the Lady Elgin Foundation, now owns the wreckage, which is now one of the few privately owned shipwrecks on the Great Lakes.
Which may be another reason that it's a little less well known than, you know, something like the Edmund Fitzgerald, which has a fraction of the death toll, but a much greater cultural legacy.
Later that night, when his lights went out of sight, came the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Madeline says this legal battle might be partly why the state of Illinois is not as good at underwater marine archaeology as our neighbors.
I mean, it might be too simple to say that this experience burned the state of Illinois and they didn't want to get into another lengthy legal battle, but the facts are today that Illinois has nowhere near the same kind of state investment in maritime archaeology as Wisconsin or Michigan or even Indiana does. So they have identified 50 shipwrecks in Indiana waters. Who knows what would be found if there was the same kind of state investment in Illinois?
Today, while you cannot visit the wreck of the Lady Elgin in person, you can visit in song.
A thunderstorm at midnight, big seas began to roll. 100 miles of water was the noble steamer's goal. But a fatal slash on her port side from a schooner bearing pine. An eerie silence shrouded all the dying engines whined. Lost on the Lady Elgin.
Special thanks to musician Lee Murdoch for letting us play his studio version of Lost on the Lady Elgin, recorded in 1993. The song was originally written by Henry Clay Work back in 1861, but a century later, Lee wrote a few more verses, like this one.
And here's to Edward Spencer, who lived along the shore. That night the waves came breaking in with cries above the roar. 16 times he plunged into the boiling surf to rest. Another soul to safety asking, did I do my best?
Of course, you can also visit the Lady Elgin exhibit at the Chicago Maritime Museum in Bridgeport. Madeline Crispell is the curator at the Chicago Maritime Museum. Madeline, thank you so much.
Oh, it was a pleasure, Aaron. Thank you for coming.
Oh, 'tis the sound of children crying for parents gone. Children slept that evening, but orphans woke at dawn.
This episode of Curious City was produced by me and Justin Bull. Susie Ahn is our editor. Sound effects in this episode came from Nathan Smith, Pure Sleeping Vibes, and Sounds for Sleeping on YouTube. Curious City is a production of WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. If you have questions about Chicago and the region, send them our way at curiouscity@wbez.org or visit us at wbez.org/curiouscity.
Lost on the Lady Elgin.
I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you next week.
Numbered with those 300 who